The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you on a Monday. The Brewers are headed out west to face the San Diego Padres for the first time in, since 2019. They're going to be playing somebody outside one of the Central Division groups of teams. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, and on the other line is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tom, Brewers just went through a 500 week, some pluses and minuses at American Family Field, facing off with the Cubs and Pirates. It ended on Sunday with kind of an unfortunate a extra inning loss to the Pirates that cost them the series 2-1. The Brewers' offense has rebounded since the slow start to the season, which I think is kind of ironic because they've been playing pretty shorthanded here the last few games. Christian Yelich officially going on the disabled list over the weekend is a pretty big blow. He's been battling some back issues and hasn't played in a week. Colton Wong, of course, has been on the disabled list. Lorenzo Cain's on the injured list. They're pretty banged up, and I don't know if there's going to come a point where that becomes a major problem. So far, they've held their own, but as you understand it with these injuries, are we looking at, you know, a long-term issue situation for these guys, or is it still pretty much up in the air?
Well, they're hoping that they're not going to be long-term. Of course, you always hope it's not going to be more than the 10 days, but what I mean by that is that there was no indication that any of them would be, like, you know, a month out or something like that, which would be unfortunate. Although with Yelich, you know, he's got a back problem. Backs can be tricky, and this is the first time he's had these episodes in the past, and this is the first time it's gotten bad enough to go on the IL, but you know, they gave it like 5 days and then it just wasn't getting any better. And you can only backdate the IL 3 days, so they just didn't want to let any more time slip away. So over the weekend, he went on the IL. Wong, I think, could be back on this road trip to San Diego and Chicago, probably more likely in Chicago. Cain, hard to say with him. You know, he's 35. He's had some leg problems. At least they have coverage with him, especially in center with Jackie Bradley Jr. You never have coverage for a guy like Yelich. And Wong's been, you know, he's a Gold Glove second baseman. You don't want to lose him either. So they have had some other guys step up. But, you know, there's no team in baseball that would not miss three players like Christian Yelich, Lorenzo Cain, and Colton Wong from their lineup. It's three of your eight regulars, you know. And so, and Wong was the leadoff hitter, although Jackie Bradley Jr. has been, you know, doing a pretty good job leading off lately. He has an 8-game hitting streak. And then, you know, Yelich is irreplaceable. So we'll just see what happens. But it does mean some other guys have to step up. And some other guys have, but just not as regularly as you might get from those three guys being in the lineup. So we'll see. At least it's in April. You know, this would be unfortunate if they were in the pennant race in September and these guys went down. So there's time to recover. My take on when you're missing guys like that is you just want to hold your head above water or tread water. You know, don't have a really terrible week. They're going to be tested in San Diego. The Padres are really good. You know, but maybe they'll catch the Padres in a post-Dodgers letdown. You know, they just had a very emotional 3-game series against the Dodgers from everything I've read and saw on TV. And, you know, maybe they'll catch the Padres, you know, backing off the gas a little bit.
I'm curious your take on Christian Yelich even before he got hurt, because he'd had kind of an interesting offensive season thus far. He was making a ton of contact. He was getting hits. He was getting on base, which I know after a rough 2020, everyone was hoping to see him bounce back. But there wasn't a lot of power. I think he only had one extra base hit, no home runs. It didn't seem like he was quite all the way back. And then this injury crops up. I think it's easy to wonder if maybe he'd been battling some back issues even out of spring training. That could play a part, but you know, it's hard to say that because he was making contact. He was swinging the ball. He was swinging the bat on time. What, you know, I think we're all kind of waiting for that Christian Yelich, the 2018-2019 version, to emerge at some point. And I don't know if you started to see those signs. What was sort of your take on him early going?
Yeah, he did drive the ball pretty well in spring training, very well, as a matter of fact. He had a very high slugging percentage. And then it looked like, you know, a lot of them kind of got off to slow starts right out of the gate when the regular season started. They didn't really hit the ball in that Minnesota series, and not that much in Chicago either on their next series. So they all struggled there. He was starting to hit the ball, you know, with with pretty good contact and had got his batting average up over 300. But, you know, the power and Yelich is one of those guys where, you know, the trigger's going to get pulled and he's going to all of a sudden start bopping home runs. But he had not got to that point yet. And now you have to wonder, and I know he's worried about it from talking to him Saturday night, that he'll, you know, need another re-entry into finding his swing, you know. So, because now he's going to miss some time. I don't think he's going to go out on a minor league rehab because the minor leagues haven't even started yet. So he's going to have to, you know, miss some time and then try to get his swing back and get going again. So it'll just be interesting to see if they get much of anything out of him in the month of April.
There are three guys that have sort of picked up the slack offensively that have helped them overcome some of these issues. I mean, there's many guys, but a couple that come to mind. Daniel Vogelbach hit two home runs on Sunday. That was in a losing effort, but that's a development for a guy who's kind of relegated at this point to being a part-time player. You wrote a lot about that at jsonline.com following the Sunday game. With Wong out, it kind of has made sense for the Brewers to move Hira back to second base from time to time and then have Vogelbach play first base. That doesn't give them the defensive right side of the infield that I know they were looking for when they signed Colton Wong, certainly, but it does. If Vogelbach's going to swing the bat like that, it does seem like that's going to give him more opportunities. You'd mentioned Jackie Bradley Jr. He's, I believe, 31 years old on Monday as we record this, and has a hitting streak. Hasn't felt necessarily like he's an offensive juggernaut, but he's swinging the bat. He's getting on base and can wreak havoc when he gets there. And then you wrote about Travis Shaw as well at JS Online a few days ago. His absolute resurgence. He had another RBI double on Sunday. I mean, that's a guy who's been everything the Brewers could have possibly hoped he would be, bringing him, you know, now that he's back. I feel like if the Brewers hadn't brought these three guys back, and certainly nobody would have said they're coming back for sure at the end of the 2020 season, that you would have counted on these. I mean, you wouldn't have even thought of, you know, maybe Jackie Bradley or Travis Shaw at that point. Those moves seem to be paying off pretty well in the early going here.
Yeah, they have three guys that you know, have been striking the ball pretty well. Shaw, Garcia, and Narvaez. And like you mentioned, Garcia and Narvaez just had terrible 60-game seasons last year. They just never got going. And, of course, Shaw wasn't even on the team. So it's like having three new bats, really, for 2021, having those guys swinging the bats well. And all three of them have hit into some hard outs, too. Their numbers, as decent or good as they are, have not reflected how hard they've been striking the ball. Narvaez has hit into some hard outs, so has Garcia, and so is Shaw. So that's what you want to do, just keep consistently hitting the ball hard. And now it's up to whatever they get from other people. You know, Urias is having a very weird offensive year. He's not getting any hits, but he's getting a ton of walks, so his on-base percentage is very high, and that's more important than your batting average. But some of the other guys, you know, aren't picking up the slack yet. Jackie Bradley Jr. has started picking up the slack. And then, as you noted, Vogelbach with two homers yesterday. That's going to really, I think, encourage Council to play Hira more at second and Vogelbach at first, to see if now he'll go on a little home run jag. You know, they've only faced right-handed starters so far. They haven't faced a left-handed starter. You know, that's very, very curious. There's just no lefties in their division. You know, it's just all right-handed pitchers in their division. And so you want some left-handed bats going. You know, they're facing Joe Musgrove tonight, another righty who's thrown a no-hitter for the Padres. So it's just been all righties. It's I wonder if any teams – so what have they played, 15 games of Rivers? I wonder if any teams – played 15 games this year and not faced a left-handed starting pitcher.
Yeah, funny, they faced Musgrove, former Pirates pitcher, so even in getting out of the division, they're facing familiar faces from
the
Central.
They are. So, and it is worth noting that, you know, this is their first West Coast trip since 2019. And, you know, they just, as you noted, they just played regionally last year. So it probably feels weird for them to wake up on the West Coast today, you know. And so, and then they come right back and play Chicago as if they haven't played the Cubs enough, you know. So, and then they'll start seeing some different teams after that, Miami and Los Angeles on the next homestand. And then they go to Philadelphia and Miami. So, finally get to see some new faces, but it is weird just the string of right-handed pitching that they've faced.
Yeah, you're right. And Well, I want to talk more about the Cubs Brewers. You mentioned that they've developed this rivalry. This rivalry sort of kicked it up a notch, as we saw at American Family Field. So I'll ask about that in a minute. But shifting to the other side for the Brewers, the bullpen has been interesting. It's not been bad. It's been, I think, fine. Probably average is how you describe it. Maybe a little below average, but it isn't the guys you would have thought, other than Josh Hader, who has looked lights out in his appearances. Guys like J.P. Feiereisen, Brad Boxberger, maybe Angel Perdomo in limited work, they've looked really good. And then guys maybe you thought that they'd be relying on have struggled a little bit here in the early going. Drew Rasmussen, Brent Suter has given up a couple home runs. Devin Williams in particular, he's probably the guy I'd most want to ask about. You've noted that he didn't have much of a spring training because he was sort of working his way back to health. So he's probably still in that building up phase where he's, you know, he just hasn't had much work on the mound yet. He's given up some home runs, been hit around a little bit. He did have a scoreless outing on Sunday, so that might be something to build on. But I don't know when, you know, when the team should start worrying about Devin Williams, if, you know, if you give him a month to sort of get back on track. But that isn't the same guy we saw in 2020. Granted, again, limited sample, but so lights out in 2020 and just hasn't been the same here in 2021.
Well, and as you noted, he got a very late start to spring training. You know, he didn't start pitching until less than 2 weeks to go. You know, he ended last year with a shoulder issue that obviously was more serious than we knew about. You know, you didn't have player access, and all of a sudden the season was over, and all we were told is that he had a shoulder problem. Well, it turned out he had a rotator cuff inflammation or tendonitis, and that you know took a long time to get over. And so they were so careful with him. So he's doing the hardest thing there is to do in baseball. He's having his spring training in games that count, you know, and spring training doesn't matter how many runs you give up, but during the regular season it does. And plus, not only is he doing his spring training in games that count, he's doing it after a ridiculous setting the bar higher than it's ever been set before, 60 games last year. And, you know, with only giving up one run and his changeup just being almost unhittable and so on and so forth, rookie of the year, reliever of the year, all of that. So the bar was set really high, too. So Craig Counsell, you know, told us earlier in the week that he's just going to start trying to use him more and not worry about it being high leverage because he just needs to work. He needs to, you know, build his foundation up. There's no minor leagues now, so you can't send him on minor league rehab. And he was asked about that, Counsell, and they said, well, we still think he's one of our better pitchers even with these issues. But it does change their bullpen because last year, you know, it was always Williams in the eighth and Hader in the ninth, and good luck to the other team because those guys just didn't give up many runs. But this year, just the fact that he – isn't the eighth inning guy necessarily right now means that Counsell has to try other people. And Boxberger had been good until yesterday when he gave up a 2-run homer. Suter's had a couple of hiccups, if you've noticed, and you know he mostly is good when they count on him. Feiereisen's actually been a very pleasant surprise. Rasmussen's, you know, he has such a scant professional background. You know, he basically only pitched 1 year in the minors, and all of a sudden last year he was up in the majors and now back up in the majors again. So it's not surprising to me that he has had some hiccups as well, but he has such a great arm. You know, they lost a very key guy in spring training, Justin Topa, who was really starting to come on last year. And it was one of the genesis of that Arcia trade to Atlanta. They got two relief pitchers back who have major league experience, and we're going to see those guys, you know, probably sooner than later. They're at the alternate training site now, Weigel and Sabaka. So, you know, they were nervous about their relief depth, and that was one of the reasons they traded for two relievers with Arcia. So that, you know, bullpens every year take a while to hash out roles, and there's some comings and goings, and options play a big part. But this year, it might take a little longer than we've seen in past years just because of the Williams thing and some other guys being new and having a few hiccups. So we'll see. The Brewers got, you know, I think Brewers fans have been spoiled by great bullpens for several years now.
Definitely.
And ask the Mets and Phillies, you know, how hard it is to get a good bullpen. Their bullpens killed them last year. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. Bullpens always take a while. You know, they do know they have Hader at the end, and he was sensational again Sunday. You know, he pitched the ninth, but the Brewers just couldn't score in the 10th. And so, but you know, if they can get to an extra inning situation and without using Hader in the game, he's a really good antidote to that runner on second and no outs, because he starts striking people out right away.
Yeah, the Phillies bullpen last year is mind-blowing. If anyone wants to go back and look at those stats, it's unbelievable that that team did not make the playoffs last year, and it was pretty much all the bullpen's fault. But getting back to Hader, I know that there's going to be some fans unhappy with how Hader gets used, no matter what happens, it seems. But he does work that really, really quick ninth inning. And then the Pirates choose to bring their best reliever out for that 10th inning in Rodriguez. And he was very effective and set the Brewers down in the 10th, was able to get out of that runner on second situation in extras. As you mentioned, having a guy like Hader makes 10th inning situations pretty favorable for the Brewers, because he can strike those guys out. And when Williams is right, he's another guy who could strike those guys out. But Craig Counsell said this after the game. He's being careful early in the year and has already said he wants to keep Josh Hader to a more, I don't know, restricted is probably the wrong way to look at it, but just a ninth inning role, or a role where he's going to work one inning at a time. Do you imagine that he will be a guy who goes multiple innings later in the year, or is this going to kind of be the norm throughout the season, that they just got to limit what he does because he's such a max effort guy? You don't want to see this becoming an issue injury wise, or where he becomes ineffective, and you know, only because the 10th inning seems like a perfect situation to deploy him one more time to get out of that early jam with a runner right at second base.
Yeah, but then, you know, if you don't score, then it goes to the 11th inning, you've used him for two innings and it hasn't won the game. Mm-hmm. So as you noted, Craig Counsell did. He was asked about that yesterday, because he could have double switched Hader into the game in the ninth and made it so he could pitch another inning without his spot coming up in the batting order. But he said he wants to hold him to the one inning. You know, you start using him. I'm not saying that Hader won't get some four out saves maybe later in the season, but if you start using him in multiple innings now, then you can't use him again for a few days. And we've just noted the other issues they have in their bullpen, and that would just compound that. So I think he's, you know, trying to be more safe than sorry with Hader right now, because he's a very unique weapon. And if you start using him multiple innings now and then he's not available as much, you know, how are you going to, especially while Williams is working through his situation? It'd be different if Williams was like the Williams of last year. Then you can start playing around with those last couple of innings a little more. But until they get Williams back to, you know, where they want him and where he wants to be, they've got to be careful with overusing Hader, and it's going to be a little experimental with some other guys too. So that's going to be an interesting thing. You know, their starting rotation has been so good, and the bullpen, you know, has had its ups and downs. So at least they're doing okay in the first half of games and not, you know, falling behind and having issues there. They do have their two best guys, you know, going in the first two games in San Diego, Woodruff and Burns. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do, because this is going to be by far the best lineup they face this year.
We've talked and written a lot about Woodruff and Burns and this rotation in general. I want to get your thoughts on the third guy, the guy who pitches after those two, because Adrian Hauser's been okay. I think we're still, I don't know if we're going to see this massive leap forward from him that maybe was hoped for at the beginning of last season. But you've got the two guys at the front. Brett Anderson's the veteran who's had some great run support this year. He's always going to be there. And Freddie Peralta's going to be a little adventurous, but we've seen the potential with him. He's a guy that I think you just kind of have to live with the roller coaster a little bit. I don't know about Adrian Hauser. He seems steady enough as a guy who can be a reliable starting option throughout the course of the season. What is your take on him? What have you seen from him so far this season?
Well, he's, you know, actually off to a better start than last year. He had, like, his first outing was good, and then he struggled for the rest of the year. He had trouble getting out of innings, a big inning, stopping teams from having big innings. He kept getting into these situations where he just got stuck and gave up some runs, and it ruined his outings. But you know, he's a pitch to contact guy. He's a sinker ball guy. He's not a big strikeout guy like Woodruff and Burns or even Peralta. Hauser and Anderson are more pitch to contact guys, sinker ball guys, and so therefore, you know, they're dependent on ground balls going at fielders more often than not, and shifts working for them and stuff like that. But you know, he has a good arm. when he's on his game, he's very effective. He's pitched a couple of really good games already this year, and so they, they think he's going to be a good one. Whether Peralta ends up as a better pitcher over time, then Hauser's going to be interesting to watch, because Peralta now has gone from a two-pitch pitcher to a four-pitch pitcher. And he made one mistake yesterday that cost them. He gave up that three-run homer to Moran. That started with a two-out walk, too. Nobody on base, two-out walks. So often those things turn out to work against you. You don't want to be walking guys with two outs and nobody on and keeping an inning alive. And so, Colin Moran drove in four of Pittsburgh's six runs yesterday, and they've only got three guys on that team who can really hurt you: Reynolds, Frazier, and Moran. And the Brewers kept letting those guys hurt them. So every team has certain guys that you got to get out, or else you're in trouble. And those are Pittsburgh's guys, and they had trouble getting them out. But Freddie actually, he gives up that three-run homer. That's all he gave up yesterday in his five innings. So, and his strikeout total continues to be very high. And so they've got three really good strikeout starting pitchers in Woodruff, Burns, and Peralta. Then the other two guys are contact guys. So, and actually is a pretty good mix in their rotation. Anderson's done very well. I think his ERA is like 2.65 or something like that. So he's actually off to a good start. So their rotation, I think, right now ranks first in many categories and in the top five in almost every category.
And Burns is setting marks that haven't been seen since the turn of the century, the 1900s. So I'll be interested to see him pitch again in San Diego on Tuesday night. Before I let you go, mentioned earlier that after San Diego, they come back and they go to Wrigley Field again, face the Cubs for already the third series of the season. We saw a pretty feisty series at American Family Field. Wilson Contreras taking exception seemingly to getting hit, even though the guy stands so close to the plate. And these pitches are not missing the strike zone by all that much, but seemed to take exception. I'm interested in your thoughts on the suspension handed out to pitcher Ryan Tepera, who threw behind Brandon Woodruff, kind of, I thought, clearly throwing at him, didn't hit him. Yes. Usually guys don't get suspended unless they actually hit a guy or start a brawl.
Yeah, I mean, throwing behind a guy is way more obvious than actually hitting him.
Totally.
Because if you hit a guy, you can say the pitch slipped. If you throw it behind the guy, unless you're Charlie Sheen in the movie Major League, it's very hard to sell throwing behind a hitter as a ball that got away from you. And Woodruff, who's a pitcher, immediately knew what was going on, so that's why he took exception to it. And then I think, like, he dotted, the strike zone the next two pitches to strike him out. So that pitch did not get away from him. And Tepera, curiously enough for a guy who's appealing his suspension, admitted the other day that he did it on purpose.
So weird.
That's not a good thing to have on the record as you go to an appeal hearing. If he gets it reduced, it'd be a miracle now since he's actually admitted doing it. So let's just go to what is the linchpin of all of this chippiness, and it's Wilson Contreras. And the Brewers hit him four times last year, but he got hit 14 times in 57 games. And then they've hit him three times this year. And I think the thing that just has made it intolerable for him is that one of them hit him on the helmet. Williams, who we just discussed, has had issues, with his command. A ball got away from him, he hit him in the helmet. No pitcher ever wants to hit a guy in the head, and Williams immediately went down to his knees. He was very distraught about it. And amazingly, Contreras just shook it off and went to first base. He didn't even want to be attended to. So good, that must have been a really good helmet he was wearing. So that's been in the back of his mind that he actually got beaned with one. But you look at these. The Cubs actually put out a little video of the 11 times or 12 times the Brewers have hit Contreras over his career, and I thought it was more condemning than giving the Brewers a bad look for hitting, because I counted 9 times off the body armor on his elbow out of the 12 HBPs. And interestingly enough, JP, if you look at the pitches and if you look at the video of the entire at bat on the home run he hit off Suter to win that game, one of the early pitches was an inside fastball, and he stuck his elbow out and tried to get hit by it, and it missed him. So even in that at bat, he was diving over the plate. He does stand close to the plate. He does dive over the plate. He wears body armor. I always say, stop guys from wearing that body armor, and they'll stop leaning their elbow over the plate because it hurts to get hit on the elbow. But it all comes down to him. You subtract him from the equation, and I don't think these two teams, would be arguing or fighting. But you do see each other a lot. And now, it's not helpful that they're going to play another series in April. And why you have to play nine times against the Cubs in April, including twice in Chicago, where the weather might not. It was really good the first time, but I wonder if it will be the second time. But it all comes down to him. They and the Brewers have been hit more times than they've hit batters this year too. So it's not like they're just throwing at the Cubs. And the Cubs hit a lot of Brewers in that series. I think they hit four batters in that series and threw behind Woodruff. So it's we'll see what happens. I'm guessing nothing happens, but you cannot give in to Contreras and pitch him on the outside corner for fear of hitting him and making him mad, because then he wins. That's what he wants. He wants you to pitch him away so he can keep diving and hit the ball away. So you got to keep doing what you're going to do. And if it hits him on the body armor, then, what are you going to do about it? So, but that's my analysis of that whole situation. It's really a one-person dispute. Wilson Contreras, that's the, I don't really think there's been any other bad feelings. And it's what led to Parra, to throw behind Woodruff. So
the internet definitely caught on to the pitch that you refer to, that he leans into the strike zone to try and get hit by a suitor pitch. And right. Especially with that game with the Mets, the Michael Conforto's walk-off hit-by-pitch right. strike, I think it's going to be a little bit more watched now by umpiring crews to make sure that that type of behavior doesn't happen. And the Brewers, like Keston Hiura has been hit a couple times. He stands very close to the plate. Yeah. It comes with the territory, right? Like if you're going to stand that close, fine. But if you're going to get hit by pitch, you're going to get hit by pitches just off the black.
And right. That's and just the way and it goes. He wears an elbow guard, one of them the other day got him right in the ribs. I know that didn't, but he does it, but he just goes to first base.
Exactly.
He didn't like point at the pitcher, point in the other team's dugout. He understands if you stand on the plate, that sometimes you're going to get hit. It's not fun, getting hit in the ribs. But when you get hit on that body armor, I don't think you even feel it. So I've seen Contreras just whip it off his arm and just go on down the first base. So that's why Don Baylor had the HBP record for years, and he never wore he wore short sleeves, never even wore long sleeves under his jersey, and he just took it right off the meat, man, and he just walked on down the first base. He was a tough son of a gun. Yeah. And I have way more admiration for people that let him actually hit him in the body than hit him on padding,
Yeah, so we'll see where this. I think the Cubs struggling offensively probably plays into this too. It's got their temperature up a little bit, so we'll see if the rivalry takes yet another turn later in the week when the Brewers come back. 3 day games at the end of the week: Friday, Saturday, Sunday. After some night baseball, deep night baseball in San Diego Monday, Tuesday, and a late afternoon game on Wednesday. Tom, any last thoughts before I let you go?
Yeah, a couple of birthdays and an anniversary I want to note on the podcast today. Jackie Bradley Jr. turns 31 today, so happy birthday to him. He has an 8-game hitting streak, so maybe he'll celebrate by moving it to 9. Mike Fasalo, the Brewers' media relations director, it's his birthday. Happy birthday to him. I've already tweeted that he gets to celebrate by holding Zooms both before and after the game, just like always. And then today's the 8th anniversary of one of the most memorable things in Brewers history, the day that Gene Segura stole second base and also was thrown out stealing second base in the same inning.
Well, man, that's an incredible callback. Just Gene Segura, always in the middle of the strangest base running plays.
He actually, in between stealing second and getting caught stealing second, he actually stole first from second base, which is not easy to do. And actually, we found out, is definitely against the rules, and the umpires let him get away with it. So, but it's one of the strangest things we've ever seen. They're still trying to fix that box score because the MLB computer would not allow you to submit a runner stealing second and also being thrown out stealing second. They definitely had to fudge that box score just to get it into the system.
Yeah, they definitely clarified rules after that. Like, yeah, that can't happen again. Nobody is allowed to go backwards a base.
No backwards running on the bases. If they allow that, you might as well just run right to third from the plate instead of going to first. Just start going backwards and see. You know, yes, no backwards running on the bases. And at least that cleared that up. Sometimes it takes a big mistake to clear up stuff forevermore.
This is off the top of my head, but I believe Segura's on first base for a bases clearing wild pitch the following year against the Rockies. I'm not positive of who was standing where, but I think he's the guy who scores all the way from first base on that another crazy base running moment. Gene Segura, who's still in baseball, still with the Phillies, doing yes. Pretty well, I believe.
Yes, he's still playing.
Thanks to Tom Haudricourt for joining us on this week's edition of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. You can find everything he has at jsonline.com. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Thanks for tuning in this week. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We will be back with you again next week. Take care.